Abu Jafar Mansur was a very stingy person. He used to call him Daniki. Daniki means he used to count. Although he was the Khalif, he used to count the cents. They have also gold and silver, and they would have like the smaller part. So the smaller part would be the Danik. Normally a king, he doesn't worry about expenses. People spend. He used to worry. Abu Jafar Mansur used to worry a lot, so he was known as Daniki. He was extremely intelligent. Extremely. You can understand. He said once he would memorize. He was stingy and intelligent. There was only one person who he feared. And that was Imam Abu Hanifa. Imam Abu Hanifa was the master of Iraq. And Abu Jafar Mansur was the leader, but the capital was Iraq. And his greatest fear was that the people loved Imam Abu Hanifa and they never loved him. Imam Abu Hanifa, rahimullah, lived in this era of Abu Jafar, knowing that somehow or the other Abu Jafar is going to try to grab him. Either by employing him, because once you take any money of the leader, you dares, then you can't give a verdict against him. And if he refuses employment, he'll be regarded as a traitor. So when Abu Jafar said, I want to make you the chief judge, Imam Abu Hanifa was never going to accept it because he knew many judgments he had to make were oppressive judgments. That it must just go according to the Khalif, the leader. Then Abu Jafar took a qasam. He took a qasam that if he doesn't accept it, I will lash him. He has to accept employment by him. And Imam Abu Hanifa took a qasam. Allah's qasam, I'll never ever take the job. So someone went to Imam Abu Hanifa and said that the Khalif, he's got too much pride, he's not going to break his qasam. Imam Abu Hanifa was very wealthy. Very wealthy, but his mind was much sharper than all. Allah had blessed him. So he gave a very nice answer. He said that, see, someone has to give kafara. He's the Khalif. He got so much money, he can give Lord kafaras. I haven't got that money to give kafara. So I rather look after my qasam, he rather break his qasam. Why, I must pay. I haven't got money. But the Khalif wasn't happy with that. So Imam Abu Hanifa said, Wallah, I'm not fit. And the Khalif said, Wallah, you are fit. Then Imam Abu Hanifa said, Siya, if I am fit and I'm taking qasam, I'm not fit, it means I'm a liar. You want to make a liar a judge? It's not going to work. And if you say I'm not a liar, then it means I'm speaking the truth, so I'm not fit. Now he was stunned. Abu Jafar was stunned. He was not happy. Carried on for a while. Finally someone told Imam Abu Hanifa, see, the Khalif said you will work for him. Just take some work. So he said, okay, I will take the work. He's building his city at the moment. I will take the job of counting the bricks. As the bricks come in, to make sure so many bricks came to sign off, right? You all brought so many bricks. How are you going to count so many bricks for an entire city? So the Khalif just finally left it. He said, okay, that's his job. And he was very happy because to count bricks is not an easy thing. They say Imam Abu Hanifa was the first one then who devised the system of what you call like a box. So when they would bring the bricks, he would tell them, put it in that box. So you have a certain structure. So when that box reaches its maximum, it means there's so many bricks in it. Because it can't get full if you're stacking it right unless it reaches a certain number. So where the Khalif thought, I'm giving him a job now, they'll keep him very busy. He wasn't busy at all. Because as soon as they would come, he said, that box, right? That box. Later on they would ask him, how many bricks would come? Give the number immediately. So he carried on life normal, and the Khalifa was not happy about that also. During that time, Imam Abu Hanifa, rahimullah, established a system. The system he established was, he wanted to make students masters in answering questions. Why he wanted to do this? So that whoever the Khalif was going to appoint as a judge, he was going to make the general public understand that this judge is not fit to be a judge. So he himself would take his students to the court. The courts were open in the masjid. And then someone would come to a judge and give a question and the judge would give an answer. Normal. And Imam Abu Hanifa sitting on one side, he would just lift up his hand. He'd say, judge, Can I ask a question? And now the judges knew that they don't want him to ask a question. Soon as he would ask a question, it would be, I think you're missing something in your judgment. That you said it like this, but if you looked at it in this manner, you looked at it at this manner, finally the judge and everyone will be stunned and the judge will say, yeah, I think you're right. So everyone will go out and start talking that the judge gave a wrong judgment. Now the judges started shivering. Because whenever they have to sit for judgment, the first thing they're looking is in that direction, is he here or not? So it became like a joke in the courts. And they couldn't stop him because he's the leader of Iraq in fiqh. So then judges decided not to take the job of being a judge. Because you get disgraced. He comes and he says, you miss one. And the judge will say, oh, what's supposed to? He says, you're supposed to do this. And as the judge says that, he says, no, not like that. You're supposed to do it like this. And he would answer it so well that even the judge there and there would accept, I missed it. So he started writing the principles of being a judge. And the Khalif people, they never want to accept to be judges. Now the Khalif is forced to look for judges. The best judges he can find now is the students of Imam Abu Hanifa. Because they don't make those mistakes. And everyone will say that we want that one. We want someone who studied by him. In this manner, he then put his students as judges in all the courts. Spread it out in the entire Khilafat of the Muslim world. Now when you got the judges all under you, and now you got so many of them that the leader cannot enforce a ruling because all the judges say, no, it doesn't make sense. And that was the first time that they separated the court from the parliament. Some say it was the first time in the world that the judge was not under the king. Nowadays in the world, in every country they have. And they said the judiciary must be separate from parliament. Once upon a time it wasn't. The king would appoint the judge and the judge would say what the king wanted. He created such a network of judges. While doing this, he always knew that they're going to try to kill me. Because Abu Ja'far knew what he's up to. Day by day he was pulling power away without showing he's being a threat. And only he did this here because he knew Abu Ja'far Mansur. Behind him was a lobby which was not good at all. So to protect the Muslim Ummah, Imam Abu Hanifa created what we call the Hanafi Madhab. That entire thing was in the face of Abu Ja'far. Abu Ja'far saw it all happening. He saw Imam Abu Hanifa's students becoming the judges. He would not have liked it. Until a time where Imam Abu Yusuf, Abu Ja'far then passed away. He passed away, Imam Abu Hanifa passed away, but the people of good, they have sincerity. Because of their sincerity, his legacy lasted up till today. Up till today, you'll find in the world people who speak of Imam Abu Hanifa. As for Abu Ja'far, I think today is the first time you'll hear about his stupid poem. The only place you'll live. Once upon a time, he was the biggest khalif in the world. But his name never lasted. All his intelligence never helped him. All his stinginess and his wealth never helped him. And another person gave his life for fiqh. At the end of the life of Imam Abu Hanifa, he received a letter from the Khalif. I want you to come back. When he read that letter, he understood that if I now go, I'll never return. Meaning most likely they'll do something there that will be my end. They can't kill him because it will be a very big thing in the country, in the world. He had students all over, but they could poison him. When he read it, Allah had given him a unique understanding. This is one part of the life of Imam Abu Hanifa. A lot of people don't know that he was a master in politics. And he created such an Islamic revolution facing the politicians of the world that they would want to kill him at every stage, but they just could not do it. Like from behind their back, he pulled the carpet out. And all their plans against the Muslim Ummah all collapsed. Because he took over all the courts. The courts were his. So the judge, whatever, the leader, whatever he wanted to do, the judge would say, no, it's not right, finished. But when that letter came to him and he looked at it, that's when he called his last jalsa. They record this jalsa in the books. He called his students from all over. He had students from Afghanistan. That's why the Hanafi madhab is famous. The lands of Iraq, the lands of Iran, the surrounding lands, all over. Now he called them back. Started calling. It was like his final jalsa. In that jalsa, he had his students sit in lines. And after giving them advices, and they understood this is like maybe the last advice he's giving. And he explained that the efforts of my life was to prepare you students. Then he started pointing out. He said, when I am not here, a day will come where the world will look for judges. He said, you, he pointed out. You all can become judges. He said, the world will look for people to make others judges, to teach how to be a judge. He said, you can do that, you can do that, you can do that. He pointed out. He said, as for you must take this role, you must take that role. What a mind he had, how he had his students, what understanding. And Allah Tabarakallah made it on his demise, exactly as he said. The world needed judges, and the ones he pointed out were the ones the world wanted. Imam Abu Yusuf was made the chief judge. Before that, in the Muslim world, some say in the world itself, the entire world, there was nothing called a chief judge. A chief judge means a judge who appoints other judges. Up till that time, the king would appoint. The king would appoint. So when the king doesn't like a certain judge, the king just removes him and another judge comes. When Imam Abu Yusuf came, he was able to change the structure. That what kind of judge is there where you appoint? Like, do you know how to be a judge? You don't know how to be. How can you appoint a judge? But finally, the Khalif, new Khalif now, Harun Rashid, he told Abu Yusuf, okay, you be the judge and you appoint judges. And once that came into the hands, then that entire fitna of the devil, where he thought through the kings, if I get the kings, I got Islam, he could never get it. Because he could get the kings, but you could never get the scholars. The scholars were the ones that were sitting in the courts, and they were passing judgment. All of this was just mentioned because Abu Ja'far's name came. What a poem he could hear, he could memorize, what a memory he had, how much of wealth he had, but his name never lasted in the world. Brilliant man he was, brilliant. He opposed the people of deen. As for the people of deen, they were mukhlis, sincere. In the ending, Imam Abu Hanifa, as he said, I will be coming back. And as he said it, it happened. He got onto his animal. His students even said, when we saw him getting onto his animal, we could see a sadness on his face, meaning I'll never see you all again. Then he went to the Khalif. He stayed by the Khalif for a while. Then as what he understood, he got sick by the Khalif. And then the news came that he passed away. Took a while, but most likely, they were giving him poison slowly and slowly, so that now they could get rid of him. But the people of Allah are such that even if you get rid of the person, you can never get rid of his legacy. And that legacy lasted until today. The world will say Imam Abu Hanifa and his teachings. And there will be muftis, there will be scholars, there will be judges until today. As for the people who tried to get rid of him, they also had to die. No one lives in the world, but one lives forever, and the other one dies even before death.
Bismillah, wassalatu wassalamu ala rasulillah.
The surah we will explain is, Inna a'tainaka al-kawthar, fasalli li rabbika wanhar, inna shani'aka huwa al-abtar. First we will explain a translation. Indeed we have given you Al-Kawthar means more than enough. Indeed, we have given you, O Rasulullah, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And thereafter, indeed, we have given you, and all of us are being addressed. Almighty Allah is saying to me, saying to you, indeed, I have given you, we have given you more than enough. So what must we do? فَصَلِّي لِرَبِّكَ So perform salah for your Allah and sacrifice. Inna shaniyaka, the one who opposes you, huwa al-abtar, he will get cut off. One more time the translation. We have given you more than enough. Salli, perform salah li rabbika, for your Allah, and sacrifice. Wanhar. Inna shaniyaka, the one who opposes you, huwa al-abtar, he will get cut. One explanation of this verse. Some say when the son of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, Qasim radiyallahu an, passed away. So normally people understand lineage lasts, or my mission lasts through a son. That's how it's supposed to be. Every person says, I don't have a son. How will my name remain in the world? Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam's son Qasim passed away. The enemies became very happy. And in Makkah Mukarramah, they started saying, there's nothing to worry about. He got no sons. So as soon as he dies, his name, his mission will come to an end. We got nothing to worry about. Allah Tabarakala revealed us that I have given you more than enough. In that there was an indication that the legacy of the people of this ummah will not last through their sons. It will last through their students. It will not last through their sons. It will last through their students. From the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it was found. He passes away, his best friend Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu stands up. Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu is his best friend, but he's not his son. He passes away, Umar radiallahu anhu stands up. He is his best friend, but he's not his son, the father-in-law. Usman radiallahu anhu stands up. Cousin, son-in-law, but not a son. Ali radiallahu anhu stands. Forget them standing. How many mujahideen stand? Every one of him only for the mission of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But if someone had to ask them, is he your father? Say, much more than a father. Much more. But they were the people who saw him. Next era. Scholars stood. Fighters stood. Lives were given. Time was given. Everyone stood. Someone says, day and night you're studying for what? For the mission of your father. Say, no, the mission of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And from there, every teacher who came, he never ever have to worry about that my knowledge that I got, will my son spread it in the world? He had no worry of that. He just had to teach, and Almighty Allah promised one student at least, or many students, they will spread your legacy in the entire world. We have given you more than enough. See, a son, he can keep his father's name, but for how long? And many a time he spoils his father's name. Allah Tabarakala said, we have given you more than enough. More than enough means you don't need one son to take your name. You will have thousands and thousands of boys and girls who will spread your knowledge in the entire world. That is how Islam has lasted. Inna a'tainaka al-kawthar. For which reason ulama have mentioned, if you want to be the wealthiest in the world, teach. Because everything else gets less worth spending, except knowledge. Knowledge, you teach it to one, it now becomes 10. You only teach one, became 10. You helped one student, you only helped him. He went to his country, he opened up a madrasa. You don't even know of that madrasa. Your one sentence to him became a madrasa. In his madrasa of 5,000 over 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, let's say he got a madrasa of 300 students. But 300 students every year, a day will come where someone will tell you, you know, you got 30,000 students in the world. You say, 30, where I got? But you got. But that 30,000 students don't end. Because each student becomes the teacher of at least another 100. So 30,000 then goes into the millions. Then it goes into the billions, into the trillions. Whoever thought in the past, understand how much of students he has in the world. This is, inna a'tainaka, indeed we have given you more than enough. No one ever enjoys so much of wealth like the people who come into the system of the propagation of Islam. Teaching of Islam, propagating Islam, da'wah to Islam, any effort for Islam. Whoever invites to the path, for him will be the reward of whoever will follow after, and it will not make their reward less in any way. How much you'll get? This is al-kawthar, more than enough. They just looked at one son. You don't have a son. Almighty Allah said, what are you worried about a son? You got a mission that will continue till the end. But that promise was given to me and you also. Me and you. A very poor man, he sits back and he thinks, I got nothing. He's also told, you have given you so much. That maybe today you are poor, but in front of Allah, you might be the wealthiest of the wealthy. A man will come on the day of Qiyamah walking, and behind him will be thousands and thousands. People will say, was he a Nabi of the past? They will say, no, he just taught. That's his students. That was a sheikh, that's his murids. That was a leader of a Muslim army, that is the people who fought under him. That was a great khalif, that is the people who worked under him. So much. فَصَلِّي لِرَبِّكَ Allah Ta'ala says, because I'm giving you so much, and all of this is coming because of your propagation of Islam. So I want you to do two things. Scholars have explained this, فَصَلِّي لِرَبِّكَ وَنْحَرْ Linked to the first verse. We have given you so much on the basis of Quran. Because the real Islam is the teaching of Quran and the message of Quran. So, فَصَلِّي لِرَبِّكَ They add this translation. Allah Tabaruk Ta'ala says, I want you to perform salah in which you recite Quran. I want you to perform salah in which you recite Quran. Meaning you yourself must benefit from this Quran. For you to be the recipient of lot of goodness, two things you have to do. One is you yourself must benefit from Quran. And the greatest to benefit from Quran is to read Quran in salah. But as he mentioned, you must have some idea of the meaning. Now because we reach the time in the world where we know Quran, but we don't know the meaning, which is a sad state. But Quran is a miracle. Even those who read Quran without understanding, they'll still feel a unique feeling. They'll feel the angel coming down. Even if they don't feel it, it happens. It's mentioned in the ahadith. Reading Quran in salah, an angel puts its mouth by the reader's mouth. That what smell is coming out from your mouth, you'll never understand. But the angels come searching for that. So one is, we have to benefit from Quran. And the greatest benefit of Quran is to read little Quran in salah. Allah Tabaruk Ta'ala make us a little two rakats of the Hajjud. But the two rakats is not the main thing, the Quran is the main thing. Even if you have to pull, you know, three surahs. So in your one rakat, don't read Uli Inna Atayna. Read Inna Atayna Qul Ya Ayyuhal Kafirun Idha Ja'a Nasrullah. So you read one page. Take it easy. So you know you're reading Quran. Our Quran has become so automatic that we just read it and we'll never even think of one word that was read. So here it's read, meaning just read and know I'm going. And then read one more page. One is we'll have to benefit. One har means sacrifice. The ulama explain it means, and then sacrifice for the propagation of Quran. Sacrifice for the propagation of Quran. Nahar normally means slaughter a camel. The Arabs knew Nahar as that sacrifice. Camel was their most valuable wealth. So sacrifice the thing that is most valuable. Most valuable for me and you is our time, our wealth, our life. Allah Tabaruk Ta'ala brought many people in the world. They sacrificed their time for Quran. People would see them later on, say, you haven't traveled the world. I said, no. He said, you haven't gone there to that one country. He said, no. He said, you went anywhere. He said, no. He said, the last 23 years, you're just sitting here. He said, yes. Only one place. He said, yes. He said, what's keeping you here? He said, one hadith. Allah's Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, khayrukum, the best of you is he who learns Quran and teaches it. He said, that's keeping me for 23 years. People sacrificed. They could have earned a lot of wealth. They said, no, I'll teach Quran. People sacrificed their lives when they knew the enemy wanted to change the meaning of Quran. They said, we'll stand against it. Our lives can go, but Quran's meaning will never change. People sacrificed to take the message of Quran around the world. People sacrificed to translate Quran, to write Quran. Allah Tabaraka Ta'ala make me and you also part of this. Read Quran in Salah so Quran will benefit us. And then send the message of Quran in the world with sacrifice. To send this message of Quran, you sacrifice wealth. Open up madrasas. Pay teachers. Sponsor students. There are many places in the world where the message of Allah never reached. But that person is dying for the message. Quran must reach him and the message of Quran must reach him. Then he doesn't need someone to give him advice. Then he doesn't need counseling. Then husband and wife are fighting and they saying, please, we need a Maulana to help. You don't ever need a Maulana. Both people need to read Quran in Salah. Both will get the answers. Both will get the answers. And the best will be the husband is a better hafiz than a better alim than the wife. So when they fight, then he has the law that on Thursday night, 2 rakats, we must read together. I'm the imam, but you can't be the imam. So that she can't say anything, isn't it? She can talk all day out of Salah. But in Salah, she can't talk. So you say, I'm the imam. But both must know the meaning. So then you check up quickly those verses which say that, you know what, you must listen to me. And then every Thursday you read that. Every Thursday. And she can't give luqmah. If the meaning of Quran comes, everyone goes quiet. The proud man also in front of Quran says, if Allah said it, now finished. Game over. But this message must reach. We must make it a mission in our life. Our wealth, our health, our living and dying, all must be for the khidmah of Quran. This is one har. So, فَصُلِّي لِرَبِّكَ for your Allah, read Salah. They said, read Quran in Salah. Benefit yourself with Quran. Because we with Quran are going to give you more than enough. But benefit yourself and sacrifice for Quran. When you will sacrifice your life for Quran, you will definitely have people who will oppose you. Because the mission of Quran is what the devil doesn't want to see. You'll definitely have people opposing. Allah Tabarak Ta'ala says, إِنَّ شَانِئَكَ As for the one who opposes you, هُوَ الْأَبْتَرِ He will get cut off. Like how I mentioned to you, Abu Ja'far Mansur, he could have people write his history every day. Imam Abu Hanifa never asked anyone to write his history. If you go in the books of the madrasas, libraries of the world, and you'll say, where's the books regarding the life of Abu Ja'far? You don't find anyone writing it. They maybe wrote it in that time. He was the king. Like how they write about the princes, princesses of today. But the second generation had no interest in him. Finished. As for Imam Abu Hanifa, he never asked anyone to write his life story. His students were forced to write it. They wrote, each one wrote something else. People gathered. A time will come 1,000 years later. Someone will ask you, you met him. He's not your Nabi. You say, he's not my Nabi, but he also was given by Allah. Khayr kathir, so much of goodness. Why? Because he made the message of Quran the mission of his life. Whoever will make it, Allah will see to his enemies. And when it said your enemy will get cut off, naturally it meant, and your remembrance will remain in the world forever. You will remain. And that is Al-Kawthar. I will give you more than enough. You will remain through your students. You will remain through everyone reading Quran because of you. You will remain through everyone teaching Quran because of you. You will remain whenever a problem is sorted of Quran, but you are the one mean. Allah Tabarak Ta'ala make every one of us. Quran becomes the mission of our life. We learn the meaning of Quran. Even if it's not big meaning, we just look at it. Allah has created ulama who stood up to translate Quran, to explain Quran. We look at it. We're only going to be reading 5 lines in my salah. 5 lines. I look at the meaning. I look at a slight explanation. I say, right, this is what I got. Allahu Akbar. Now when I'm reading it, I don't have to know this word means this. I got a picture of the whole thing. This is what's meant. And as I read it in my salah, it's called I'll absorb Quran. The message now will enter my heart. But you have to have that message. Then that medication goes nicely. Allah Tabarak Ta'ala make us all from the people of Quran.